Fair warning, the following contains disturbing sexual imagery and criminality. The names and identifying information of the perpetrator of these crimes and of victims have been changed to protect all concerned. Everyone listening should proceed with a thoughtful consideration of utmost caution. These are real crimes committed by real people. Human sexuality fills the space between pleasure and desperation, reflecting the limits of our flawed understanding of the most intimate part of who we are. Around us, cinematic fantasies of violence and larceny, of terrorism and despair, are presented as entertainment. And then, as we approach sexual criminality, all fantasies become guilty until proven otherwise. We come to a place where ignorance is the last stop as sex becomes crime. You have now entered Sex Crime Central. His name is Dustin Johnson. He's just 18 years old. His occupation? Well, Dustin still attends high school, but he knows that he is something more, something far greater than just an average high school student. At present, school has let out for summer vacation, and although no one else knows it, Dustin Johnson is about to demonstrate how very wicked clever he is. Not so anyone else will know, but you know, just a live demonstration of his shocking powers for himself. He knew that this would be so very easy for someone like him, but actually, now that he thought about it, there was no one like him. And it was enough that he knew, and part of his pleasure was that no one else would ever figure it out. His crime would be horrifying to most anyone reading about it later, and they certainly would read about it later. But for Dustin Johnson, his journey was neither shocking nor horrifying, as his empty ego led him on a premeditated tour of a place known as Sex Crime Central. From this moment on, Dustin Johnson would never, ever be alone again. His companionable image of himself would fill the empty vessel where other people keep their souls. Dustin Johnson had no problems with the idea of sex. At least, he was okay with it. And he thought it would probably be okay with just about anybody, except that for his Mormon family, sex, outside of wedlock, was a sin. He knew that his family would be dead set against any effort on his part to have sin, and that he'd have hell to pay if he got caught. That was okay with Dustin, too. The idea that he might have to be punished or somehow be responsible for his behavior really didn't trouble him in the least, because he knew he had already developed a surefire way to avoid ever getting detected by anyone. God, people were so dumb. No one would ever figure out what he'd done. No one even knew he was interested in her. He'd made sure of that. Truth be told, he wasn't that interested in her, except as a proof of concept. The concept that everyone was dumb except him, and he was going to prove just how above all of them he was. That thought made him excited. That thought was more exciting than even thinking about having sex for the first time himself. He'd made sure of everything before going over to his next-door neighbor's house. He knew she was home alone, and he knew that her parents weren't going to be back until much later in the day. He walked over. He rang the bell. The young woman opened the door with a smile of recognition. She greeted him, "Oh, hi, Dustin," and then she just waited there like the rest of the dummies in Dustin's entire world. Could I come in for a minute? There's something I need to talk to you about." She'd known her neighbors for years, and she opened the door wide to let him in. He smiled, as he always did, one of those charming boy-next-door, gee-shucks smiles he'd perfected over the years. It was only when the door shut that he felt free to pull his knife. Holding the edge to her throat, he led her into her own bedroom. He'd been excited at the thought of desecrating her most personal space. There, he pressed the blade into her throat until the terrified young woman, just a year older than himself, took off her clothes. Powered by his own sexual interest and a heady admixture of domination and control, he then raped her. She thought she was so cool, he thought, glad to have proven to her that she was not all that. After tormenting her verbally for a time and taunting her about her response to his crime, he finally grew tired of the game. The point, after all, had been made. She was an idiot compared to him. He then took his knife he'd used to merely threaten her, and he viciously cut her throat, got up, and left as she bled out, taking pains to make sure none of her blood was on him. He went back home and acted like he always had, just an average guy, somebody nobody would ever suspect of doing bad stuff. He felt a new feeling he'd never enjoyed to this degree in all his life. He knew he'd discovered his drug of choice, his path, his God, and his purpose. He felt fulfilled with the idea of dedicating his life to demonstrating to the world how it wasn't what they all thought, and that his chaos, his own personal brand, could fall upon them at any time. But Dustin was an amateur and didn't know enough to make sure his victim was actually dead. She was immobilized, out of shock for the most part, but before she passed out, she made a point of writing Dustin's name in blood on the wall next to her. Shortly after that, she'd lost consciousness, but she was still alive when her family found her. Dustin's feigned innocence and his G-shuck smile and his family's upright background proved to mean nothing when the cuffs went on his wrists. He smirked, even so, at the time, knowing that he was not merely an accidental tourist to Sex Crime Central. He knew he'd do better next time. His judge didn't understand this, and he made Dustin serve only 20 years before he got out of prison and gained his second chance to show everyone just how superior he was. If you've been following Sex Crime Central, you know that maybe the best, but certainly the last part of our podcast is devoted to doing a deep dive into understanding how it is that human beings could ever perpetrate such terrible misdeeds. And today, I'm joined in our debriefing as we kind of walk through this and try to figure out how in the heck Dustin made the decisions that he made that day.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me here.
What was your reaction to this?
I've got to say, I mean, that was chilling. I had literal chills when you were talking about not only the, you know, leading up to Dustin's crime, but also the young woman writing his name in her blood. And that was truly horrifying.
That's a pretty dramatic story. And
more dramatic than any of the stories that we heard on season one. I'd say so.
Yeah, and really, it's the kind of story that put me off from ever doing a true crime podcast, because for me, true crime is mostly associated in my brain with an exploitation of not just the offenders, but an exploitation of the audience, because they're so horrified. It's really sort of like crime porn.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this one is awfully close to that, right? If it isn't that by itself. But here's where we make the shift, is in trying to understand how this kind of crime can happen. Because if we could understand it, then we could prevent it.
Well, I definitely have a few questions. I mean, first of all, you go into so much detail about what Dustin was feeling and why, you know, kind of what was leading up in his thoughts to this crime. How do you have that type of insight? How do you know so well what he was capable of?
Well, it's a great question. And that's reminds me of why I'm really glad you're here today. It's all of the stories in Sex Crime Central are taken from the lives of my clients. It's true that I've changed the names, and I've also changed some of the identifying details, like age or occupation. But the actual crime unfolded as I portray it to be. And in all of these cases, these are individuals with whom I've done hundreds of hours of work. So I've had a chance to get to know them very, very well. And even the ones like Dustin, who know they're so much smarter than all the rest of us, and they have in their minds that they're stringing us along, they too are quite knowable.
So when you talked about Dustin being incapable of being a human being or possessing what human beings have, I mean, it's clear that he lacks any empathy toward other people. I mean, what else would you say he was lacking? Is he just a sociopath textbook or...
Well, yeah, you know, he's a human-shaped object.
Yeah.
But he's not really human, because when we talk about our humanity, we're talking about love, mercy, compassion. He doesn't have the ability to engage in any of those feelings. He doesn't know what love is. He doesn't know what mercy is. He doesn't know what compassion is. He knows the words, of course, and he can use them in a sentence in a way that makes sense. But as you listen to someone like Dustin, those words clearly don't have any emotional oomph. He knows the words, but he doesn't know the tune.
But with Dustin, I feel like he comes from this seemingly loving nuclear family that has a lot of religion inserted into their lives and is a very important value to them. I mean, what do you think ultimately led him down this path?
Again, a really great question. Prevention, for me, is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
But to prevent this crime, I think we would have to go very far back, because Dustin's problem is genetic. He was born with the deficiencies that he has. And such an individual may never be able to learn how to be loving or kind, truly loving and authentically kind. Approximately 19% of the population, the general population, has personality disorders.
I didn't know it was so high.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people realize that number when you really think about it. I mean, it makes sense, but...
Yeah, and if you think about a normal personality... You know, we all have a lot of agreement when we meet somebody and we're talking about them later. Oh, she's really a sweet person. Yeah, she's so thoughtful. She's so kind. And no matter how many people we get in the room, most of us can agree on what the personality of that individual is. And a normal personality is made up of hundreds of traits, right? Mm-hmm. Dustin doesn't have hundreds of traits to work with. He really just has one, and that is that he is so very superior to others, and his disdain is his distinguishing trait. So for him, the idea that he's smarter than others, you know, he's not capable at this point in his life of growing past that. In fact, one thing I made a mistake on when I was writing this, I said his judge let him out after 20 years. Well, of course, that isn't true. His judge sentenced him to a life sentence, which was mandatory. He was eligible, however, for parole at 20 years.
Wow.
And he won his parole and got out largely by convincing the people around him that he was a model prisoner. He was just great. And he did that by being a great actor for 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so I know that this is going to be a burning question for everyone in the audience, but the young woman did survive?
Yes. She did survive. And Survive is probably the best word. I don't know any details about her, but how do any of us ever get over a trauma like that?
No,
I just can't even imagine that it, you know, we might get some scar tissue and some healing, but it's definitely a mark. And I think, frankly, that's part of his satisfaction in life, is that he was able to make such a profound mark. It's just that he wanted to get away with it. That was the other part.
Well, it's such an extreme violation, you know, to utilize a relationship like that he had and perform that crime in her own bedroom, in her home. I mean, I don't know if there's any sort of a worse violation of someone's, you know, life. But where is he now? What happened to Dustin?
Well, I'm sorry to say that when he was released, he again behaved like a model citizen. He eventually married, had a baby. He was an excellent worker in sales. He was in sales. And because of his ability to charm people, he always was winning awards for being the outstanding salesman. However, he never was capable of change, ever. And he was capable of fooling so very many of us over time. So one thing I look at with all my clients is an old tool developed by Alfred Adler about 100 years ago to look at career, friendship, and love. And I'm sharing those with the audience because I think it's important. It's such a simple tool to look at a man and to know the answers to those questions. In his particular life, he had what looked like a lot of friends. Because he was a social butterfly. Mm-hmm. He looked like he had a real career because he was so successful at work. And he looked like he had love because he was, of course, married. However, the truth was, you know, when he was in therapy, he never talked about his wife. He never talked about his baby. They were really like wallpaper to him.
Yeah, just sort of extensions of this persona he had created.
Yeah. Yeah, like an actor using a cigarette to make an impact. Yeah. That's what he was doing. And then the same thing occurred with career. He had a job, but he, you know, working 40 hours a week, that was for squares. That wasn't for him.
Yeah.
He knew he was better than that. And yeah, he did have hundreds of people who knew who he was, but he never had a single friend. He never was hanging out with a friend in a meaningful, significant way, making a meaningful connection.
Mm-hmm.
So this is who he was, and he ended up, wow, it's so rare too. This is statistically extremely rare for a sex offender who's gone, a previously convicted sex offender, to go 7 years post-incarceration and then reoffend. That's practically unheard of.
But why? Because they do it sooner, or because
if they're going to reoffend,
then they, yeah.
Sexual crime is actually one of the lowest recidivism crimes that you can imagine.
Wow!
And so it makes counselors like me look really good because virtually none of my clients recidivate. Well, Dustin was one of my more painful exceptions to that, and at about the 7 year mark, he had put a lot of thought into this because he knew he was never going to get caught again. And he shaved his entire body, scrubbed thoroughly in an effort to try to get rid of any lingering DNA. He had already targeted a couple of different victims. And he broke into a woman's house when he knew she was at home and blindfolded her. And again with the knife, took her from room to room of her own house, sexually assaulting her, and making comments to her about the family photos, making sure that it was all so very tainted. There was nothing left intact, and his victim could never go back to that home. That was impossible afterwards. And again, he thought he was just so clever. And I don't really want to share how the police became aware of him as a potential suspect, but it didn't take much in the way of police work for them to find him. Unfortunately, before they did, he did the same thing with another victim he'd been scouting for a really long time. And he was so successful at disguising himself by terrifying the women, blindfolding them. And then after the sexual assault, he forced them into the shower, forced them to thoroughly bathe. And both women were so traumatized, they couldn't go back to where they lived. And then he, you know, carried on with life before he was arrested. He carried on just like he always had.
Just went normally home to his going family, back. And, yeah.
Going to work, doing all the things they did, even going to therapy. And in his case, you know, he was sadly for me, a necessary lesson, because although there are 19% in the general population who have some sort of a personality disorder, his particular personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, is rather rare. It's like 1% of the general population. And in my experience working with people convicted of sex crimes, it's actually quite rare. Okay. It's quite rare. So I've never seen anybody reoffend to the extent that he had. And when he went to trial, he was sentenced to prison for what is quite likely to be the very rest of his life. So the public can relax. He's never getting out again. But so, can we see these people coming? Well, you know, and that's kind of, you know, how we give women that horrible advice about don't dress this way or don't walk out in the yeah. parking lot at late at night if you're not unescorted. And of course, the criticism is, well, maybe we should explain to men, don't sexually assault women.
That could be another option. I mean, maybe hit it from both sides right. for the first time.
And with him, though, his crime didn't have to be sexual. And if you go back to his, before he had ever hit puberty, could we have told that he was going to become this guy? It's hard with kids because kids, you know, we therapists aren't supposed to diagnose children with these personality disorders because children are under development. They're mm-hmm. under construction. Their brains are actively growing. And a lot of kids act like little sociopaths, you know, with their magnifying glasses, burning ants and torturing little insects and that kind of thing, punching their little brother or sister and claiming that they're innocent. They don't seem to have a lot of remorse or a lot of empathy.
Yeah.
We grow into that, okay? Well, over time, we should be able to tell, though, even an elementary school teacher should be able to tell who's really making friends and who's not. There's a difference between playing on the playground and boys and girls actually making real friends. And if the teachers don't see it, certainly the parents should be able to see that.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope so. Even in going through this crime, it never felt solely sexually motivated. It felt yeah. like his motivation was not getting caught, which of course he was twice, mm-hmm. And also the humiliation factor and really premeditating all of these different things to make sure that he could really target that person in the worst way possible.
Right, right. You're absolutely right. And for him, it could have just as easily been financial.
Yeah.
You know, where he, like a corporate raider who goes in and guts a company and puts 10,000 people out of work and then walks away with a lot of money, not because they had to do it, not even because maybe that was the best decision, but just because they could. Mm-hmm. And that's that same kind of mentality. And it can be manifested in a variety of ways. I have a feeling that of those listening right now, and I'll just say this, everyone listening right now has met someone like this. Everyone. And it's a little bit like that movie Rounders with Matt Damon. If you don't see them, they're in your life and you're potentially a victim of them. If you don't see them, you could potentially date them and even marry them. So it's really important to figure out if the people we're getting involved with, like Dustin's wife, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure she was thrilled to be getting married just like anybody would be. I'm sure she was thrilled to be having a baby with her husband. And I'm sure she thought that whatever coolness that he might have had toward her and the baby was only because he was a guy or only because he, you know, he just was new at this and had never been around it. And she probably made a lot of excuses for his lack of genuine, authentic warmth and care.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't do that. You know,
that should be a red flag.
Yeah, because this is what we mean by being human, and people who lack these qualities of love, mercy, and compassion, that's what makes them inhuman. That's what we mean by inhuman.
Mm-hmm.
If you lack those qualities. So they're so much more important than, is he a hard worker, or does he have a good IQ, or, and for that matter, I'll just say gender-wise, there's no gender distinction here. Women can be sociopaths as well as men, right?
And sex offenders.
Yeah, and sex offenders. So we want to be thinking and learning to manage our sexuality intelligently as we go about mate selection. And for those of us in the counseling business or in law enforcement, we really want to think about personalities, because it is a major clue as to, is this person a legit suspect or not? Because to commit that crime, I'll tell you right now, for everybody listening, that is not the kind of sex crime anybody without that personality disorder would find exciting. Normal guys, you know, let's say in this case, heterosexuals, normal heterosexual guys would not be able to get an erection and enjoy that experience sexually and have an orgasm with a woman who is terrorized, extremely uncomfortable, and actively being tortured. That's not a turn on for any normal guy.
Wow, because that really goes against, I mean, so many things you talked about, sort of torture porn and true crime porn in these ways. But, you know, you're watching a television show and it always seems to be this type of crime. Is this more of the type of crime that you see in your 20 years?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. This is more like the Cape Fear version of sex crime, right? It's the worst of the worst. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people who commit sex crimes, they're really just far more pathetic in that moment than they are predatory. You know, Dustin was clearly predatory in his behavior, and he enjoyed being the predator and treating the rest of us as prey. But that's the rarity. And I think that's another thing, you know, that when we're looking at potential mates, or we're thinking about people who are potentially criminal in their behavior, we don't need to be afraid of everybody. This is one of those horrible crimes that nibbles at the edges of our consciousness. But if you watch TV or if you listen to true crime, it sounds like everybody is
somebody
like...
Everyone is exactly like this. Right, yeah, it really does. So that's really interesting.
It's. I think it's important. I mean, it's important to know that such people exist, because isn't that what we say? How could he do something like that? We're so shocked and so horrified. Well, yeah, there are people who can do horrifying things.
Yeah.
And they're really, if we can remember this, they're really not human. They're only human shaped. You know, they may be very attractive. They may be young and beautiful. They may be financially well off, but they're only human shaped. They're not really possessing a heart. He doesn't understand how he only acts human, and he'll never be able to pull it off. Dustin Johnson was a victim of his own irrational thinking, in his belief that his was the sharpest intellect around. He viewed his world much as a black widow spider might, a world where everyone, every other, was merely prey. From the women he viewed as potential victims to his society at large, everyone was so pathetic, so boring, simply part of the herd. He could do anything, and he knew he could get away with it. But this was the practical joke played on him by Mother Nature, who really had made him different from all the rest. What Dustin Johnson didn't know was that he was made to look human without his actually having the parts necessary to be human.
You're listening to Sex Crime Central with psychotherapist Stephen Ng. This has been an Ng Intellectual production, with original score by Octophonics, audio production by Steve Cooper, and video production by Jesse McCloskey. Follow Stephen on social media platforms at StephenIngMFT or visit StephenIng.com for more information. Don't forget to subscribe to Sex Crime Central and leave us a review with your thoughts on each episode. We'd love to hear from you.